This is Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Don Gagne. On the show this week, the latest in service robot technology. Are we any closer to a sci-fi world of robot housekeepers? And the story of an integrated baseball team in Bismarck, North Dakota, that broke the color line a decade before Jackie Robinson signed with the Brooklyn Dodgers. But first, we've all heard the stories about the city of Detroit and its decades-long decline.
Detroit has just become a ghost town.
That's Russ Wilson, who has lived in Detroit for all of his 47 years. He's a property owner and landlord, so he especially notices the urban blight that has taken over this once bustling industrial capital of the car business. There are still cultural centers, architectural gems, funky restaurants, and big sporting events downtown. But in the neighborhoods,
20 years ago, there was houses, the blocks were full of people, children playing, people had jobs, but now people have no jobs. They have no hope.
That's our cover story today, a look at the city of Detroit, which, by the way, is a place I consider home. What's ahead for the city, and can it be saved?
Today, I'm confirming my determination that a financial emergency exists in the city of Detroit.
That was Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, a Republican, at a press conference this month. Under state law, Snyder took financial control away from the city government and put it in the hands of an emergency manager, Kevin Orr, who starts his new job on Monday. Can he make a difference? On the brink of bankruptcy for years, some Detroiters, like 27-year-old Kelly Holt, are happy that someone is finally doing something. As she waits at the bus station, Holt says she feels stuck and unsafe in downtown Detroit.
My family's here, and right now financial difficulties is preventing me from moving anywhere. I was always safe as a kid working in Detroit, but now I can't go without walking up the street looking over my shoulder, making sure nobody's trying to rob me.
Also waiting for the bus, 57-year-old Keith Higgins. He thinks Detroit doesn't deserve all the bad press.
The news is exaggerating to a degree. It's bad, but it ain't bad as they say.
But he does express frustration with the city government.
There's not decent management taking place in the city. Financially, there's been misappropriation of funds, there's been stealing, there's been lying, and there's been cheating.
The most recent and infamous example of that is Detroit's former mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, who this month was found guilty of federal racketeering and corruption charges. As for the emergency takeover, many are protesting what they see as a violation of their voter rights. They didn't vote Orr into the city government, and now he controls their tax dollars.
Well, I think everybody is of sort of two minds about this.
Stephen Henderson was born and raised in Detroit. He's written about the city for the Detroit Free Press, where he's an editor. Henderson is also host of American Black Journal on Detroit Public TV.
Anyone who lives here can tell you how awful our city services have become. People are literally dying waiting for ambulances. The lights are off in 45% of the city. The things that we would expect any city to deliver at a basic level just do not happen here, and I think everybody is getting tired of the idea of that being true and the delay in trying to fix that. You know, at the same time, nobody is cheering the idea of an emergency financial manager, which sort of wipes away the democratic process in the city for at least a short time and takes the people we've chosen to try to fix things here and sets them aside.
And how much does it matter that it is a Republican governor, Governor Snyder, and Detroit, obviously, a hugely Democratic city?
Well, I think that matters quite a bit. I mean, the fact that Rick Snyder is a Republican has almost everything to do with the people being suspicious of the motives and worrying about this being a political power grab.
The city government, the city council tried to fight this, tried to block it, went to the courts to no avail. It's now happening. There is an emergency manager. Has anything changed at City Hall? Is there a sense, okay, this is happening, what do we do?
You know, as you point out, it's a done deal. Kevin Orr starts on Monday. It's one thing to say you're not happy about this. I think it's another thing to sort of indulge the unreality of the idea that you can now stop it now that it's happened. I mean, there's no point in that, and it's really sort of a distraction from the work that we need Kevin Orr to start doing on Monday.
The city has been dealing with loss of population for decades now, and financial troubles, serious financial troubles, are nothing new. But what was the tipping point? How did we get here?
Well, I mean, last year, the city was facing one of its cash crises where the governor and the treasurer, the state treasurer, intervened at that point to say, look, we've got to have a set of agreements to prevent this from happening again. Over the last 12 months, though, what we've seen is that the steps that were agreed to in that agreement didn't take place. So many of the things that we were supposed to do, city council stood in the way of. The mayor, to some extent, was unable to convince them. The governor just had had enough and decided that this was the only way to get things fixed.
But it sounds like there's just a lack of confidence in institutions, certainly the city government, the city council, but also in the state government and perhaps even this emergency manager.
Yeah, well, I think everybody here has heard, I'm a Detroit native. I grew up here in the 70s and 80s. How long have we been talking about the city government turning itself around? The cash problems that we're having now are connected to the decline of the city's population and tax base over a very long period of time, and nobody really has had a great answer for fixing that. Detroit right now is collecting half the income tax money that it was just 12 years ago. I mean, if you imagine a business that has half the revenue it had 12 years ago, I mean, you'd be looking for a new business to be in. Cities don't have that option, really. We've got to figure another way to either downsize so that we are only spending as much as we're now taking in, or find a way to get more revenue to the table.
And that gets us to one of the major problems of Detroit, the so-called donut hole effect. In the 1940s and 50s, at the height of auto manufacturing, Detroit was a booming metropolis. But racial tensions led to white flight from the city. Additionally, auto companies opened new plants out in the suburbs, taking jobs and workers with them. The population of Detroit itself has dropped by a million since 1950, leaving empty neighborhoods, abandoned properties, and too few residents, and too few tax dollars to pay for everything.
This is a city that's 140 square miles.
Scott Martell is the author of the book, Detroit, A Biography.
The Detroit Free Press, one of the local papers years ago, did this wonderful graphic where they superimposed a map of Manhattan, the city of Boston, and the city of San Francisco over the city of Detroit, and they fit in with plenty of room to spare. So think about that for a second. I mean, that kind of space with 700,000 people in it at this point.
700,000 people. That's fewer than the number of people on the National Mall for President Obama's second inauguration. Imagine that number of people paying city taxes for the roads, public transportation, education, police services for a 140-square-mile city. And those people left are increasingly those stuck in poverty. Scott Martell says the numbers tell the story.
In Detroit, in the last census, one in four people hadn't graduated from high school. That compares with one in 10 people in the state of Michigan overall. Home ownership in Detroit, 54% versus 74% in the rest of the state. Perhaps the most intriguing number here is the poverty level. 36% of Detroiters live below the federal poverty level, compared to 16% statewide.
It sounds really bleak, but other U.S. cities have found themselves in dire financial situations. In 1995, the city of Washington, D.C. faced huge financial, education, and crime problems. And like Detroit, Washington, D.C. was subject to an emergency financial takeover. Anthony Williams was the man appointed to handle the district's financial crisis. He went on to become mayor of the city for two terms. But back in the late 90s, he faced a job similar to that facing Detroit's emergency financial manager.
My job was to essentially put in place a budget and financial plan that would bring the district back to solvency and then ultimately financial recovery.
Mayor Williams says it all has to start with accountability.
I guess there's an understanding that financial accountability is key to public trust, which is key to settled expectations and the willingness of businesses and citizens to live in and invest in a community.
And Mayor Williams thinks Detroit's emergency manager, Kevin Orr, needs to start by taking some baby steps immediately.
Just start doing things, get some points on the board that show people, you know, there's intelligent life, that there's a light on in the house and somebody's home, so to speak. So that's, for example, collecting revenue, just basic receipts, creating an environment where people have an understanding bills are going to be paid.
Mayor Williams also acknowledges Detroit's other problems.
There are a lot of racial issues, a lot of alienation from the suburbs, a lot of a sense that, you know, the city has kind of been victimized intentionally or unintentionally over years and years and years. Some of that may be true, some of it may not be. I guess the point I'm making is that, you know, we've got to kind of like avoid relitigating the past and look toward the future.
And looking to the future is one thing Detroit is good at, says author Scott Martell.
You don't give up. You don't acknowledge weakness. You just keep, soldiering on and on and on. None of you guys from Ohio or Illinois or Florida, can throw rocks at Detroit. That's our job to do.
And speaking for myself, as one who proudly wears his beat-up old Detroit Tigers baseball cap all over the country, I can attest to that sentiment. Coming up, we explore how March Madness affects worker productivity and even health problems. Stay tuned. This is NPR News.